On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned.
Your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. Thank you so much for tuning in our Thursday afternoon show. I will say, favorite day of the week. Love doing this Thursday show. We always have a wonderful guest in studio and a wonderful studio audience. Today we're going to be talking with John Guandolo. And I think some of you have listened to the show for a long time, recognize that name. John Guandolo is a longtime friend of ours, a friend of this show, and really kind of a warrior for America. I just want to give a little bit of introduction of his background. And then we'll talk about the topic that why I invited him on the show today. It ties a tiny bit to the protests that we are watching happen around America at Yale and Columbia and pretty much campuses around the country. We will get to that, but before we get to that, we're going to talk about the growth, the explosive growth of Islamic schools in Texas and around America. So that's our main topic, but here's who John Guandolo is. He's a U.S. Naval Academy graduate. So grateful for everyone's service and people going to Naval Academy. He served America as a Marine in combat operations and reconnaissance units. He was then an FBI officer developing counterterrorism programs, identifying jihadi networks, and then the Department of Defense conducting strategic analysis on the communist and jihadi movements inside America and around the world. Today what he does, he interacts with the public. He brings information to groups of people, mainly in Texas, but around America, to help them understand the threats we don't see that are all around us. He does community resource trainings to help help Americans fortify their communities against the hostile forces who want to destroy their freedom right in front of them, but we just don't see them. So, welcome to the show, John Guandolo.
Thanks for having me.
I was trying to remember the first time you're on my show. It was a long time ago and things are very different. But I want to kind of jump in because as we were communicating earlier today, there's so much to talk about.
Yes.
And I don't want to cut short. I want to be able to cover all those topics. So the reason I reached out to you, so I was at a political event last week and someone who I believe helps your organization just happened to mention in a conversation after the event that evening that there is a new Islamic center under development, I guess, in the McKinney area, which is near where I live in North Texas. And she gave a little bit of an explanation to the crowd, and I asked her more about it afterwards. And, you know, it was one of those things where I live, I don't know how many miles, but not far from McKinney, up in Collin County, and I would not have heard anything about this. So I want to start with this kind of explosion, I said in the introduction, explosion of Islamic schools. Let's just start with, what do you know about this one in McKinney, this development that's coming anew? We'll get to many other developments you know about, but what's the status of this Islamic community and school growing there?
So first of all, this is, as you said, a huge topic, and there are many tangents, but I think the thing that absolutely ties it to what's going on around the country, not only on college campuses, but all over the country, that we've seen Hamas people and their supporters blocking bridges, airports, threatening to kill people, threatening to martyr themselves, openly stating who they are and what they're doing. This is a Hamas Muslim Brotherhood entity up here in McKinney, the McKinney Masjid. And again, for your audience, Masjid, Mosque, Islamic Center, those all mean the same thing. So that's the first thing, is it's hostile, and what they're developing is an expansion of what they already have there. That's the first tip of it. And I, for Texans, but also for everyone around America, the headquarters for Hamas in the United States is Chicago, and the number two hub for Hamas is Dallas, Texas. And that's something a lot of people don't know. There have been more terrorist attacks, jihadi attacks, since 9/11 in Texas than any other state in the country. And I think these are things that a lot of people don't all put together. But you have to ask yourself, when you look at the level of Islamic scholars that they're putting in places literally within 15, 20 miles of McKinney, Texas, you have to ask, why are these men some of the cream of the crop of Islamic scholars on the planet? Why are they here? Why aren't they in, you know, Rota, Spain, or in Cairo, or, you know, somewhere else? Why are they in McKinney, Texas? And the answer is because they have a plan and they're executing that plan. And these are the same people that slaughtered people in Israel and are still doing it, you know, since October 7th.
On the subject of Hamas, we were talking about that as we came out the elevator to come into the show. There are protesters on these college campuses, and we'll get them more later, but who've been chanting, "We are Hamas, we are pro-Hamas." They're trying to say, you know, "We are Hamas" is their chant. And Hamas, I'd love to have you just embellish a bit. Hamas, my terminology, they're a jihadist organization posing as a government, or they are the government of Gaza, and they are at its root jihadists. They believe in the role of jihad in Islam, and they're not only right, but their obligation to commit jihad. But is there an innocent side of Hamas I'm not seeing?
No, there's not. So the difference is, so Hamas is an inherent part of the International Muslim Brotherhood. They are an inherent part of it. They self-describe themselves as the Palestinian wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. And what's important to remember is the Muslim Brotherhood bylaws state that their objective is to impose Allah's divine law, Sharia, on every human on earth and establish a global Islamic state. And to do that, they must fight the enemies of Allah in order to establish the Islamic state under Sharia. So that's who Hamas is. But more importantly, legally, it's a designated terrorist organization by the United States government. They have a military wing, which does these operations. They have a social cultural wing, which does things like relief operations and community outreach. And they have a political wing, which does propaganda and, you know, men and women walking around in suits and very nice clothing, pretending to be friendly when they're not. They have the same ideology as ISIS and Al-Qaeda, fighters on the battlefield. The same ideology as the guys that put babies in ovens and slit people's throats and did those horrific things that we have seen evidence of
on October 7th.
In Israel on October 7th. These are the same people, and they're right here in McKinney, right here in Dallas, right here in Plano. And they're being given a pass by the police and the local officials and the pastors and the rabbis who are giving them a pass.
In the legislature. And
the state legislature. And where's DPS on this? Nowhere to be found in Texas. But it's the same in every other state. You know, what state is addressing this? None.
You know, the reason I want to do these few introductory points, because when we dive in, I want to really talk about why people who are living in communities with these Islamic centers, with Islamic schools as part of them, why they should be concerned about that. So there's one other introductory point about this. So Hamas is committed to the teachings of Islam, committed to being to the jihadist agenda. Hamas is the one that attacked Israel on October 7th, and they are just a portion or a segment of or a member of whatever you call it, the International Muslim Brotherhood. So is there the Hamas is just pure, I mean, if that's your agenda, that's just pure evil. But there are people who would say, well, okay, Hamas is bad, and obviously maybe Hezbollah is bad, but there's an innocent element of Islam where people just want to have, just like in America, we have freedom of religion, you know, we in America embrace that in our First Amendment. There was a basic notion about freedom of religion. So is the idea of focusing on Islamic schools as to distinguish, for example, from Catholic schools or Episcopal schools, what is the reason that they should be segregated out as you do and focused on?
Well, first of all, if we want to talk doctrinally, which nobody yes. ever seems to want to talk about, Islam teaches second graders and fifth graders and seventh graders that Islam isn't a religion, that it's a complete way of life, social, cultural, military, political, and religious. That's what they teach their children because that's what the system is. So to liken it to another religion, it would be inaccurate. To liken it to, if we want to compare it, you should compare it to something like a constitutional republic or communism or some other totalitarian state. Not that constitutional republic is totalitarian, but it's a governmental system. So that when you look at it through the lens of Islam, how Islam defines itself, it's a governmental system. It's not merely a religion, which goes to your question about the mosques. The tertiary thing that happens at a mosque is people pray there. There are much more important things that happen at a mosque that are more, should be disconcerting to citizens of Texas or wherever else. So the fact they pray there, that's not the primary function, for instance, of a mosque. And I think that question, how does Islam define what a mosque is it has to be at the center of this, what we're doing. Because then if it's just a Muslim church, which I hear a lot of pastors and rabbis tell me, that's flat out wrong. And they don't teach that anywhere in Islam.
So the mosque is, people go there to pray. What is the nefarious thing the mosques are doing if it's more than just a place to pray?
Well, I would just say what Islam defines the role of a mosque as, first, let's back out. Islam teaches that their prophet, Muhammad, is the perfect example of a man. Everything he said and did that's authoritative should be emulated by all Muslims for all times. So how did he view and how did he use a mosque? Well, he used the mosques as an outpost of the Islamic State. It's more, I would equate it more to an American military base or at least an embassy as a forward outpost of the Islamic State, where they primarily teach and adjudicate Sharia. But it's a outpost of the state that governs the affairs of Muslims and all people in that area. So that's the first part. It also is a place where food, water, ammunition, weapons are stored, where battles are planned. And oh, by the way, we pray there. And the Muslim Brotherhood's own documents explain that as the role of the mosque. Islamic documents and history demonstrates that's the role. When you ask if we had, let's say we had 20 combat veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, and I asked how many mosques that you went by or went into, or really just that you went by, how many of them were you shot at from? And they would say all of them, because that's the purpose of the mosque. It's the place from where battles are launched. They have convinced our leaders, and I would argue a lot of American people, that it's just a place they go to pray. That's not even the secondary duty of a mosque. So that's that has to be the understanding. Where European officials have gone in, and I'm thinking in France and Germany specifically, into mosques, they found military-grade weapons in mosques in Germany. We have affidavits and statements from FBI sources in cases where the perpetrators were convicted, where the source said, I participated in regular weapons training in the mosque. That's because that's what it is. So if you went into 10 different mosques and you asked me, do you think any of them would have weapons? I would ask, why wouldn't they? That's the purpose of the place.
This is really, really very helpful in setting the table before we talk about the explosion of these centers around North Texas. And I know it's around America, but it is vital to understand, to kind of quick summarize, the mosque is used as a place of worship, as a portion of a small portion of what it does. Military outpost. It is a training center for military activity. It is a political staking out of political ground, of ground they're claiming that they govern, they control, correct?
Right, correct.
Okay, so all those things, and I wanted to do this because I think for many people, especially we've been just, number one, we love our First Amendment freedom of religion. Number two, we've been just an avalanche of coverage about DEI and inclusion and being fair and not being discriminatory. That is very hard for people in America who don't follow what you do and other people do to get their arms around the idea that what a mosque is in American community is different from the Lutheran church down the street. It's just not the same thing. It has a whole meaning. And then back even further from that, what Islam really has from its founding, as you were describing, Muhammad being the perfect example of a good Muslim, has been an aggressive force in the world culturally. Islam has been pushed by those who claim they're acting and following the Quran and engage in aggressive battles to take over, to spread control, to spread Islam everywhere. The last thing I want to hit on is this idea of hijra, because when I finally realized what that concept was now, it helps everyone understand what's happening in Europe and here.
Yeah, so the hijra of the Muslim community from Mecca to Medina is important for a number of reasons. But I think it's the point that I find interesting is in that time in Mecca, for the first six, according to Islamic sources, the first 7 or so years, Muhammad only converted 6 or 7 people. Now think about this. In the first 12 or so years that he was in Mecca, the highest number I've seen is around 150. Most Islamic sources say about 100 people came to Islam in those first 12 plus years. Then the hijra, the journey to Medina happens, which, by the way, is when the Islamic calendar begins, not when Muhammad's born or when he starts getting revelations in Mecca, none of that. The hijra is when the Islamic calendar begins and we get our first instructions on jihad, which is defensive jihad, but defensive not as defined as we define it, but meaning they can launch offensive operations if somebody refused to allow Islam to grow or other reasons, without going to the lengthy legal explanation of that in Islam. Then you get offensive jihad for limited reasons, and then you have the final command, which is permanent jihad for all time until the entire world is submitted to Islamic law and there's an Islamic state, a caliphate in the whole world. That's the importance of the hijra. And again, the Islamic calendar starts at the hijra. That's how important jihad is to Islam, and it's at the center. And I want to just take one more thing you said, Debbie, about when they actually are staking out ground. When they build an Islamic center, if you imagine putting a pin in the map, taking about a 3-mile distance radius and drawing a circle around that mosque, they are claiming that ground for Islam. That's why they build a mosque in areas where there are not nearly enough Muslims for like a 2,000 or 3,000 person mosque or bigger. And you're like, well, there are 12 people in the community. The reason is they are claiming the ground and then they're going to occupy it. So they will buy up the houses and move into the houses closest to the mosque first and then grow that out. And there's a whole process on how they do that. But this is really important.
Okay, so the hijra thing, the concept, maybe I'm not using the right word, but the concept of going to Mecca making the journey to Mecca as a purpose of you know, showing you're submitting to it or you're following it. But what I want to get to was immigration, the concept of what we think is immigration. Oh, we're going to help rescue these people who are living under repression or some other problem. Using immigration as a first step toward invasion and eventually conquering the foreign lands that accept Islamic immigrants.
Right.
Is there a different word, or isn't that what they're calling
hijra? That's right, and it is important, but the people that do it are called the Mujaharun, and those are the immigrants, the people that go into the land that is not under Islamic control, and that is actually a part of jihad. That has to be understood, is that the people that are intentionally coming into France, Germany, England, the Netherlands, you just fill it, and America, whether it's Texas or Iowa or wherever, that's part of the Mujaharun, and that is part of the jihad. It's jihad through emigrating, claiming space, and forcing Sharia to be the law of the land in the communities that you are living in.
That's the concept I want to get to, because I want to make sure people grasp that, because in America, we have tried, I mean, recently we're getting a little bit tired of the border being open, but we have tried to be just, you know, we want to welcome people here and certainly people who are oppressed. And so people come here for whatever reasons they claim they have, and we try to embrace them and include them. Except for Islam, we have not had a sense that this was an intentional surreptitious takeover. But it is what happened in Europe. It happened, it is, as we've talked about the show many times, what's happened in France and Western Europe and the and UK, the immigration of people coming to that place, to this area, and they are accepted because of the reasons, because they're trying to have liberal politicians who want to show open arms and kindness and all that. They establish a presence. They have, you know, they have those no-go zones now in many places in Western Europe. So they arrive claiming they are refugees. They settle in an area and they claim it as theirs, and pretty soon the rest of the community is not welcome there. They use it as a means of expanding Islam, eventually by force when they get to enough numbers.
That's right. And I want to just share a couple experiences. When I was in the FBI, there were a couple people we were investigating, and I had one of them shared a particular story, and I won't go into the details because it doesn't matter, but something that happened in the community where a crime was committed. And I asked him, I said, well, why didn't you call the Fairfax County Police? And he looked at me as if I had just said something truly bizarre. He said, why would we do that? We have Sharia, we enforce Sharia in the community, and that's what we do. We don't, why would we call the infidel police? And this was back in 2002 or three. So where you have a Muslim community, you always have Sharia. It's there. And it's their obligation to expand it, always. I want to say one more thing. I had a very lengthy discussion yesterday with somebody that was fascinating, who has a genuine, is a real patriot, genuine heart, but literally, genuinely did not understand a little bit about what you're asking. What about people that self-identify as Muslim? They were brought up in it. And they don't want to wage jihad. They don't want to live under Sharia. Some of them came to Canada and the United States to get away from it. What about them? And I said, well, I think in my experience, most Americans and most Christians especially who try to welcome them have no idea what they're dealing with. And so they don't even know how to communicate with them. And so that's a complete lack of education. But there's two points here. One, everyone that self-identifies as a Muslim obviously is not a threat. It's very difficult to discern between who is and who isn't, because the deception is at the core of jihad. It holds jihad together, deception. So a Muslim under the laws of jihad can come to the non-Muslim state, whether it's France, although I'd argue a lot of France is the Muslim Islamic
pretty
state.
Much been taken over,
And some parts of America are. But this is the Dar al Harb. This is the place where there isn't Sharia, and so they could wear a cross. They can keep their face clean shaven. They can pretend they're Jewish or Christian, and they can flat out just lie.
It's acceptable in Islam for them to do that.
Yeah, it's obligatory if it advances Islam. So they can do that. They're not allowed to do that in the Islamic state. They have to trust their real intentions. And there's so much that flows out of that. But I think, so we need to be really savvy, but we have to know, if you don't know Sharia, really don't know Sharia, then you don't know what the hell you're talking about when it comes to this war that's going on. You are clueless. You're going to remain clueless if you don't actually know it. And it's not that complicated, because they teach their 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old children the core components of Sharia, which is why, as you know, I love to use textbooks from U.S. Islamic elementary and junior high schools, because they say it right there. You know, I'll give you a couple quick quotes.
Please do.
The duty of the Muslim citizen is to be loyal to the Islamic State. Islam is not a religion, comma, however, but a complete way of life, governed by Sharia, which comes from the Quran, and the Sunnah, the example of Muhammad himself, that the three duties of all Muslims is to call people into Islam, is to encourage good and forbid evil, good and evil defined by Sharia, and jihad. Those are the three duties all Muslims are obliged. So a Muslim who doesn't adhere to Sharia, doesn't want to adhere to Sharia, that's not a different version of Islam. That's just someone who's not doing what they're supposed to do. But for somebody like President Bush or President Obama to get on TV and say true Islam is peaceful and loving, that's a lie. That's a flat out lie. And there's no Islamic doctrine ever published in any language in any century that supports that.
Okay, one last thing I'm going to hit on, then we're going to get right into this community in McKinney. But the last point is, because we haven't, you and I haven't talked in depth about, for a while about this, is a concept of Sharia. And, you know, Sharia, you can say, well, every religion has. I mean, the Jewish faith, they have the Old Testament, they have the Ten Commandments, and, you know, Christians adhere to the Old Testament as well as to Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' teachings. Everyone's got their teachings. Isn't Sharia just kind of like the Islamic teachings as the Bible is the Christian teachings? I know that's not the case, but I didn't know until I really got to know you and listened to you a lot and read a lot more. Sharia is an all-encompassing set of laws intended to replace any civil laws, any secular laws. It governs not how you tie your shoes, but something pretty close. Pretty much everything you do, there's a rule in Sharia, and Sharia is barbaric in its punishment that it justifies toward violations of its rules. And to have, when ISIS was trying to build their caliphate, it was to instill Sharia, to install Sharia as the absolute law over everyone.
That's right. So what we've seen is, so what is the Muslim Brotherhood and therefore Hamas, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Islamic Jihad, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, pick your flavor, and all these nation states, what do they say their objective is? And universally they say an Islamic state over the entire world, the caliphate, under Sharia, period. The Muslim Brotherhood bylaws say it. The Iranian constitution says it. Every Muslim nation on earth is a party to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the largest voting bloc in the UN. In 1993, they served the Cairo Declaration on Human Rights to the United Nations, which says we, the entire leadership at the head of state and king level of the Islamic world, state that we only understand the concept of human rights through the lens of Sharia. Therefore, if you leave Islam, you are killed. If you commit adultery, you are killed. If you're homosexual, you are killed. If you steal, you have your hand amputated. If you commit treason against the Islamic State, you're killed. If you kill a Muslim without right under Sharia, you're killed. This is Sharia, and it comes from the Quran, which is the direct word of God, and the example of the Prophet Muhammad, the perfect man, who said, I, Muhammad, have been commanded to wage war against the non-Muslims until they testify there's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his messenger. This is the Muhammad who married a six-year-old, consummated the relationship, she was nine. This is the Muhammad who condoned killing people who mock him and Islam. This is the Muhammad who condoned torture. This is the Muhammad who participated in beheading up to 900 Jews after the Battle of the Trench. This is what Islam is. And so our leaders, America, hear me, your mayor, your city council, your governor, your state legislature, your president of whichever flavor you like, your Congress of whichever flavor you like, they have all been criminally negligent in doing their sworn duty to the oath of office because they've failed to do the most basic thing in any war, which is to actually know your enemy. Islam, contrary to what several presidents and secretaries of state, national security advisors, and governors, and military generals, most of whom should be in jail, have told us over the last 20 years, Islam is not complicated. It's very simple. It's so simple, a six-year-old can learn Sharia. That's how simple it is. And it is barbaric, and it's evil, and it has no place in a civilized society.
It's utterly inconsistent with Western civilization and certainly with the laws of America.
Of course it is.
Okay, so now I want to get to, so what's happening? So we have this, immigration for the purpose of conquering. We have absolute agenda of ultimately to bring Sharia and to enforce Sharia, to force conversion to Islam. And now we have Islamic centers and schools springing up all over Texas. Just talk about the one in McKinney. There was a video that I tried watching before we came here. I couldn't find a good segment, but this Islamic center that's being developed just outside of McKinney that you're someone working in when your team told me about the other day. Just describe briefly what's coming outside of McKinney.
Well, it's going to be a massive multi-purpose property, mostly school. It's got a school, obviously. So when you hear the term like an Islamic society, like the Islamic Society of Arlington, Islamic Society of Greater Houston, those concepts, that includes usually a mosque, at least one mosque, a school, and then other parts that will be part of this. This is going to be a very broad Islamic society, and even more than that. So it's going to have a lot of different pieces. They've raised a ton of money to put this thing together. But it is going to be a base for Hamas in McKinney, Texas, because that's what the McKinney Masjid is. That's a Hamas mosque.
Okay, so the word is Masjid. Say that again.
M-A-S, right, J-I-D, is the same thing as a mosque.
Okay.
It's the same thing as an Islamic center.
Okay.
And I wanted to, if I might, for simplicity's sake, one of the things I'd like to share is, you know, we've got, if you put a pin in the map around McKinney and draw about a 17-mile radius, you've got 18 mosques. Before I came here today, as you know, I looked at all 18, and it was fairly quick. It was fairly quick work to determine 16 out of the 18 are hostile. Some of them you don't need to do any research because of who owns the property or the name, like the Muslim American Society. That's a known Hamas, Muslim Brotherhood mosque. The other two, I just didn't have enough time to do the research. But if you look, whether you look at their bylaws or their constitution, you look at these imams, like at the McKinney, first of all, that the McKinney Masjid is actually called the McKinney Islamic Association, the Islamic Association of North Texas, the Islamic Association of Plano, whatever it is, that's Hamas.
So okay, these are things you sent me, the little charts, because we could put them up.
Yes.
Okay, so Mr. Miller, you know those things, I think I'm going to tell you what clip number they are because I'm paying attention here. It is clip four. Yeah, clip four, we had two pieces. I mean, is this, I think, there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
So these are mosques in the North Texas area that all, the red arrows are indicating these are all essentially Hamas.
Right, and if you look at like the, you know, if you look at the, McKinney, it's the McKinney Islamic Association. They advertise as the McKinney Mosque, but it's the McKinney Islamic Association. It's a mosque. And I just look at the, you know, Sheikh Omar Hussein, their imam. Well, first of all, he worked with, it says right here, he went to Cairo, Egypt, and went to Al-Azhar, which puts him in the absolute cream of the crop of Islamic scholars on the planet. I just always ask the investigative simple questions. Why is he here in McKinney? If he's literally the cream of the crop of Islamic scholars in the world.
Yeah.
And then you go down a little word like, oh, I see that he worked with the Muslim Students Association. And he worked with these other Hamas Muslim Brotherhood groups. So I can pretty much stop my research there. But you can do a deeper dive. When we look at these other local places. When we look at their project and we look at the fact that the Islamic Center of Frisco, same thing. You've got a sheikh who runs that place, Sheikh Mahmoud, who's also an Al-Azhar scholar. And what are they teaching? Look at their curriculum. They're teaching Sharia. When I pull out, you know, I print it off. Thank goodness they're so nice to print off at some of these schools their curriculum from first through 10th grade. And what are they teaching? Whole sections on fiqh, which is Islamic jurisprudence, to first graders. Jurisprudence is not religion. Jurisprudence is law because Sharia is law. And they're teaching it. Thank goodness they printed out a little syllabus right here. So thank you all for making that available online. I'm greatly appreciative. But as you know, I've got so many. I spent in Virginia, there was a colleague, I got to be a little vague about this, but they have a place there where they literally have textbooks from mosques and Islamic schools on every continent. And both when I was in the FBI and with DOD and after, I spent a lot of time going in there for sometimes a day, an entire day, and just reading through books at a time. And what I found is when you read 100 different 7th, 6th, 4th grade, 10th grade textbook from an Islamic school in Kenya, in France, in fill in the blank, and all over the United States, they all say the exact same thing, that the duty of a Muslim is to wage jihad, to establish Islamic State under Sharia. And what's interesting is when you get up to 5th grade, 7th grade, now they're talking about, you know, introducing the concept of takia, lying, in order to, it's right here on the syllabus, takia.
Lie for the purpose of advancing Islam.
Lying for the purpose of masking. And for those of you who think I'm not telling the truth, maybe the camera can see right up here. It says right there, takia. So it's here, it's all there, and then it talks about the hijra. It talks about the fact, now this, you know, we have talked about this in these textbooks. They teach Sharia, they say that the purpose of Islam is to abide by Allah's divine law. And it's the duty of every Muslim to do that to the best of the ability. Not understanding that is why we lost the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, parts of Africa where we were fighting, if Americans are aware of that, and other things. But it's also why we're literally on the brink of losing America, and not to understand, as we're starting to probably go into this, that the stuff happening across the United States on campuses is not merely communists or not merely just Hamas. They're working seamlessly at the ground level. And therein lies the much deeper problem, is that you have violent communist groups supported by China, for one, but others also. And you've got violent jihadi groups across the United States supported by, this is the key, what we're dealing with on these college campuses, this is not homegrown organic anything. These are hostile foreign powers, most of them nuclear powers, Iran almost a nuclear power, that are using the network they have in the United States to actually wage war against the United States. And our leaders, especially at the national level, are so criminally negligent and treasonous that they are doing, not only doing nothing, like most governors in America, they're not only not doing nothing, their ignorance of this has caused them to wittingly and unwittingly do things that's advancing the enemy's cause.
I'm glad you saw that. We are going to turn to college campuses. It has been amazing over the last, you know, many things we observe in America. In fact, back to the Occupy Wall Street movement, which is now, whenever that was, quite a while ago, 10 or 15 years ago. But it looked like, wow, an organic movement just broke out, you know, and so the young people just really felt strongly about, you know, and being opposed to Wall Street. All of it was orchestrated and funded and propagandized. I mean, the individuals engaged in it didn't know that. I mean, a lot of them just kind of, yeah, I guess this is the flavor of the week. We're going to protest. They did not realize, but they were being used by these folks. I want to hit one thing. This was two things I want to hit. One is there was a tweet. This is clip two, if you can hit that here too. This is a tweet that was out just basically about the funding coming to these organizations that are engaged on college campuses. George Soros is $132,000 right to the Westpac Foundation, which is a group over Students for Justice in Palestine, $650,000. So it's over $500,000 to this JVP. So this is basically students that want alleged justice in Palestine. So it's big anti-American communist money coming from Soros to these groups to stir them up. And then there was just,
a Hamas group. Students for Justice in Palestine is Hamas. So to be clear,
yes,
they have so many backdrops. The AMP, the Muslim Student Association, all these groups are Hamas groups. And they are working together on college campuses.
Okay, I can skip those other tweets, but beneath the one you just saw, the one with the money, they had screen grabs of all of the coordination by students on these campuses. I mean, it was not like, gosh, we just got so outraged about Israel defending itself and trying to get after Hamas in Gaza that we just had to stand up. I mean, you know, okay, you're going to go here and take this building and get inside the building because then they won't be able to get us. It is so coordinated, not at a level a student would ever think of. I mean, it is orchestrated, and this is what's just so frustrating about the media in our country, because they're treating it and covering it as though they're seeing noble and righteous students standing up against an outrage, and it's all garbage. It's all a lie. It's all orchestrated.
That's right. I will say, when I speak to communities, the thing that I think is shocking to them, whether governors or state attorney generals, or citizens at the community level, the thing that's shocking to them is how well coordinated these entities are from the international right down to the local level. And I want to say something about that in a little deeper sense. If we go back to the late 70s and early, early 80s, up through really the late 80s, we now know that 100% of the anti-nuclear war demonstrations were all funded and organized by the Communist Party. A lot of them were organized by Comintern in the Soviet Union, but a lot were like, the Italian Communist Party, Communist Party USA in the United States. So the National Communist Party and other of their affiliates were organizing this and staging this. And I'll just, as a general rule, 5,000 people don't materialize magically with really nice signs and pre-painted banners magically, right? Yeah. Somebody's paying for that, someone's organizing that. That's called an investigative clue that this is an organized effort. The key I want people to really understand is that these are hostile foreign powers, nation states, a lot of them nuclear nation states that are driving this, right? So behind the Islamic movement in the United States and in North America is the international movement. So this is the leadership of Iran and other countries working together. Again, and you've got, there are power struggles there. So because they fight each other, because Saudi Arabia is scared to death of Iran crushing them, which is a legitimate concern, doesn't mean that either one of them is our ally, right? When Islamic movements or groups or nation states fight each other, it is always over Sharia, matters of Sharia or power, that's it. And so once you understand that, if we had actually an adult, just one, at the State Department or in the CIA or in the FBI that actually decided I should be professional and actually maybe even know what the Cairo Declaration is or actually read Sharia, since everyone fighting us on the Islamic side says that's what they're seeking to impose, we might gain ground. But we're Americans, I can't overstate how catastrophically we are getting our butts handed to us in this war. At all levels.
You know, one thing you and I think our mutual friend Frank Gaffney brought up years ago was this document called Memorandum of Understanding, which was, we don't have to go into the whole long story, but it came to light. It was basically the laying out of how the Muslim Brotherhood intended to take down America. And is that the right term, Memorandum of Understanding?
Explanatory Memorandum.
Explanatory Memorandum, yeah. Mm-hmm. Explanatory Memorandum. In fact, I'm sure, I mean, I've read it repeatedly. But basically, it's a document we have in our possession. The government has. It lays out, this is how we're going to take down America. It is like you got the playbook, before Hitler launched World War II, you've got the whole playbook. It's telling us what they're going to do to us, and they just continue to make progress on it. And so this gets me to my question, how in the world is it that all these foreign nation states you were just describing can be manipulating things in America and really working people into ignorant lather and protesting things that are crazy and they are illegitimate? How is it that we don't have some entity in the American government recognizing it and exposing it and fight? I mean, the FBI, the CIA, all these agencies that are supposed to protect us seem aware of this and to be at least permitting it.
So it's because what we're experiencing right now and have been, I would argue, for the last 4 years or so, you could argue the last 7 or 8 years, is the culmination of, right, of a 100-plus-year communist movement in the United States, 60-plus-year jihadi movement in the United States. And what they are doing is exactly what they say they're doing. Now we have Muslim Brotherhood leaders in Europe, in the Middle East, on camera, saying, "Yeah, here's where we stand with America. We think the movement is at this place. We feel pretty confident that it's just a matter of, like, the game's over." From the perspective of the communist leadership and the Islamic leadership, they believe it's over. They're just letting the game clock run out. Americans still have their thumbs up their backsides, more worried about this weekend's barbecue and the next sporting event than we are about saving our children, saving our country, defending liberty. And I think how we got here is because our enemies have been working literally almost a century, and really since the you could argue early 60s, I think American adults have become more and more ignorant, immature, drifting away from principles that guide them, their faith, right? Our Judeo-Christian pillars that keep us standing as a country, morals, right? And yet all of these things, pick one topic and you can trace it back to a line of operation by the bad guys, right? They told us in the 70s, well, you know, we need to put women in the military service academies because it's all about equality, and why wouldn't they? And we're going to put women in combat fighting positions. And that's all it was. Well, it wasn't about that. It was so they could destroy our national security. Now look what we have. We have people walking around with animal masks on, half naked in leather straps. And these are military officers who aren't losing security clearances and being punted like a bad football out the window. I mean, because our general officers are cowards, they're treasonous, they should be in prison. 20 years we've been at war, and you can't find a general, you can't find one that can explain Sharia to you. This is where we are. Find one person on the House Intelligence Committee that can have a rational discussion about what we're having. They can't. Find one person in a position of leadership. Find one governor that could talk for more than 6 seconds on what we're talking about. They can't. These people are not just incompetent. You ask why? Maybe it's because James Comey was the FBI director and a communist. Maybe it's because we now see in our government, these aren't just bad people, incompetent people. They're communists. They're actually acting on behalf of foreign powers. And to say that, people are like, oh my God, it's another era of McCarthy. Well, I hate to tell you, Joseph McCarthy was right. And actually, he underestimated by a factor of 100% when he said we have about 212 people that are communists in our government. Turns out there are about 420 at the time that were no BS communist agents at senior levels of our government, to include the assistant secretary level of places like Treasury, State Department, in FDR's White House. I mean, it's unbelievable. And here we are this many years later. The reason we don't have national security entities addressing it is because they're the bad guys.
They're compromised, or they are. They're not with us. Okay.
Right.
You know, we're going to talk about that. I do want to leave time for questions because I'm going to guess a bunch of questions. We had some video you shot, I think, at Texas A&M, which was just
UT Austin.
Okay. Yeah. It was a protest, and I think it's the one I sent you that emailed via text. Yeah. This is just one example. Protests in every major university around America. But if we have the volume with her, that'd be really good.
Free Palestine. From the river to the sea,
Palestine will be free. Yes.
Palestine will be free.
From the river to the sea,
from the river to the sea.
This is happening at Columbia, Harvard, Yale, every Ivy League, not that they're the only ones, but at many major universities, protests, shutting down schools, blocking Jewish students, harassing Jewish students. She's chanting, from the river to the sea, and I know you know, but just tell everyone, what does that mean, that chant?
Israel destroyed.
They want to destroy and kill all the Jews.
Yeah.
Destroy Israel, kill all the Jews. They're chanting this, and just picture any
UT
other-
UT Austin.
Yeah, UT Austin, any other place where if they were chanting against a certain race or ethnicity, the entire media world would be hysterical. This goes on and they're almost championed as, well, they're just standing up for people. So you have youth in our country so, I don't know what the right word is, hypnotized, propagandized, and led along by the forces you were just describing, where they think they're doing something good. So we're in a very dangerous place because these young people don't have one clue what they're talking about, not even a clue. In fact, someone was telling me earlier today they do with a man on the street, you know, one of these goofballs, you know, what are you fighting against? So I don't know.
Yeah.
They didn't even know.
Ask them what river and what sea. They can't tell you.
They know what chant to say. And they're talking about destroying the country of Israel. So I want to just, we have to leave time for questions, but these chants on college campuses and this disruption there, there is just a gnawing fear that there's so much ignorance widespread and that the administration in most of these schools can't even figure out what to do about it. They don't know whether they can. I mean, some of them are cracking down a little bit, suspending, expelling people. But I want to get to this. My final question to you and let you think about it while I make my 2 points. My final question is, what do you do about these college campus people? And what is it the average American citizen can do about Islamic centers growing and the ignorance around them? What are we supposed to do? And while you're thinking about that, I want to say two things for our happy listeners. One is, there was a great book written by Nani Darwish called, who grew up in Islam, is now an American Christian. She wrote the book Wholly Different, W-H-O-L-L-Y, Wholly Different. She's a friend of mine. She basically wrote about, because Christians cannot comprehend what people who follow the Islamic faith, what they think God is, Wholly Different. If you just read that book, it just opens your eyes in ways that it's impossible for a show like this or something short that you read to do for you, to help you understand just that utterly, you don't even recognize it as religious thought, what it is in Islam. That was one. The other one's by Raymond Ibrahim, who's also been great. Join me on the show. His most recent book, he writes, or it's his second most recent book, called Sword and Scimitar. And he basically traces through the history, pointing out that when Muhammad, brought Islam to the world, he basically said, the purpose of Islam, of the jihadist, to be a loyal Muslim, you must conquer all other faiths, you must kill or convert the infidel, you must push Islam and take control of the world. It is a world domination agenda, and that's what the caliphate's intended to be. But he documents it in Sword and Scimitar over the centuries, and it's really quite eye-opening as well, because I do think the things we're saying today and the things we talk about, John, all the time, it's very hard for the average person who doesn't dive into this to even think there could be people on planet Earth who would actually think this way in this era in 2024, but it's exactly what they think. Now, so actually in 10 seconds, how do we fix this? Not 10 seconds, but what do we do?
Well, I've said for a long time, I think the answer is, local citizens at the county level need to get organized. And the training that I've done for a number of years is teaching citizens, local law enforcement, local city councils, county councils, mayors, whoever will, is open to actually doing something and actually taking action, showing them, number one, how to organize as a community. Number two, how to identify the organizations and leaders of the communist and Islamic movements, how to understand who's collaborating with them, who's funding them, and at the county level, how to very aggressively but lawfully flush these people and organizations out of the community. So it begins with, number one, deciding that you actually want to save your community. Number two, that you actually want to live under a Republican form of government like the Constitution mandates, and that you believe that's the best thing for your children, for your family, and for your community. And if that's what you believe and you actually see the problems in your community, that's the answer. This isn't going to be fixed at the federal level for two huge reasons. Number one, the kind of war this is and the vast network that they have across the country. And number two, of course, that the Republicans and Democrats at the national level are operating against the American people. I don't see any evidence that as an organized effort, Republicans or Democrats are doing anything except they talk a big game, they lie a lot, but they're not actually doing what they say they're gonna do. They have a lot of hearings, they make really cool speeches, but what they're actually doing is emboldening our enemies. And we're to the point now that putting hope in a presidential election or in the Congress or something at the federal level working, I think is a fool's errand. At the state level, we see zero in the last 10 years, zero actions taken at the state level by legislatures or governors that have a deep impact into the communist or Islamic movement. We have seen some actions taken that impact, but none that actually target these movements. And I'll kind of sum this up by saying this. One of the things I stress is no war in history has ever been won by changing a policy or fixing an issue. Our adversaries have American citizens focused on free speech, the right to keep and bear arms, the border issue, the COVID vaccines, forced mandates, pornography, and deviant sexual behavior in our elementary schools. And the list goes on and on, right? Voting fraud, all this stuff. And while Americans are worried about issues, our adversaries are fighting a war. And the way you win a war isn't by changing a policy or fixing an issue. It's by crushing the enemy, vanquishing them, or getting unconditional surrender. So until we actually shift focus from the issues to the enemy, we will lose this war. It's not possible to win the war. And that's why almost 100% of my time is spent focused on training communities to do this. Because yep. If I thought there was a better way to do it, I would be doing it, but I'm not aware of that.
Yeah. And thank you for all that you do in your trainings. I know they're remarkable. I hear about them all the time. So we do have time for questions. And there you go. We have one right here. Just speak right in the microphone.
Debbie, John. Yes, I noticed you talk about the mosque and the centers that they are for insurrection in many cases. Of course, Islam is passed off as a religion, so they have their tax-free exempt status at the mosque. Now, don't we have rules, laws that we're just not following up on? When one of these imams gets up there and starts being political and talks about the different things that are really insurrection-type comments relative to America, and we just don't go after them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So thank you for asking. So here's what I would say to that is they are, we can demonstrate, like the mosques we talked about earlier, almost all of them raise money for Zakat. And the former chief terrorism prosecutor in the Southern District of Virginia, or Southern District of New York, Andrew McCarthy, who prosecuted the blind sheikh, the Al-Qaeda case, and wrote a great article about the fact that if you fund Zakat, you're funding terrorism, because in Islamic law, at least a minimum of 1/8 has to go to category 7 of the 8 categories, which is legally defined as Islamic military operations. And under US law, that's terrorism. So the mosques are violating that law. They're committing a conspiracy to overthrow the US government. In many cases, you can tie it to conspiracy to commit murder. You can tie it to, if you've got people engaged in this that are public officials, you've got other violations there. You've usually got money laundering investigations. There is certainly a RICO case that could be made both at a state level and nationally, but that would require an FBI that actually wants to go after enemies of the Republic instead of patriotic Christians and Jewish people. So that's the short answer. So the answer is yes, actually a prosecution would be relatively straightforward. It's why in my book, Raising a Jihadi Generation, at the back is basically a boilerplate affidavit, because it's that easy.
I'm sorry, boilerplate affidavit
that could be used for a search warrant for these places, these mosques,
okay.
An arrest warrant, all of that, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry we didn't mention your book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. We should have had a picture of it ready, but we don't. Okay. Please go ahead.
John, I thought you and Debbie were going to talk about this a little bit ago, but I'm not sure how it came out. I've talked to people who said, oh, I know some really nice Muslim people, and they're not bad. They probably don't practice Sharia or Islam or something. If that's the case, which maybe it isn't, but if it is, aren't they infidels too?
So that's a good question. So first of all, the answer is I'm not the Sharia police. So I don't really care what they are.
But isn't anybody who doesn't convert an infidel, or no, who doesn't convert to Islam?
So Islamic law mandates that under the Islamic State, you must convert to Islam or be killed. The exceptions to that under Islamic law, under Sharia, are Jews, Christians, and Zoroastrians, who are given the option to submit to Islamic law, pay the non-Muslim poll tax, and feel themselves subdued. Those are the options. Anyone, Muslims, who don't abide by Sharia, then are apostates. They've apostatized themselves under the law of apostasy, and the penalty for that is death. But I think I want to be real clear. It doesn't matter, I don't think this is the case, but it wouldn't matter if 96% of Muslims didn't want Sharia. All of the entities that have power in the United States and Europe that are Islamic do, and they're driving the war and they're winning. So what Mohammed or Fatima or whatever they do in their home or their neighborhood means nothing to me because they're not part of the war fighting effort. Except when people say, well, my neighbor's really sweet and they're a Muslim, so what you're saying is wrong. That's an incongruous thought pattern right there. Because the fact that your neighbor thinks something that's not what the jihadis are saying Sharia is, and they're not wrong, and you can't prove them to be wrong. That's not a different version of Islam. And they are of no consequence except where they get non-Muslims to believe that that's a different version of Islam. And so we need to focus on, we need to get, which we've spent 20 years doing, we need to get moderate Muslims out for a moderate Muslim. Well, the moderate Muslim, that's a line of operation for Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. So we focus on, so long as we're not focused on the enemy and we're over here talking to liars like Zudi Jasser and Dr. Kanta Ahmed and all these others, we're not focused on the real jihadis and crushing them and obliterating them and winning the war and defending liberty. And I'll just say one more thing on that. When people talk about, you know, that's not nice, that's not loving, what is definitely not loving is a president lying to the camera and saying true Islam is peaceful and loving, because here's, not only is it a lie, which therefore philosophically can't be loving, but therefore Muslims that are grow up in it that want to get out but can't under penalty of death, it's like if Ronald Reagan hadn't said the Soviet Union's an evil empire, if he said, God, they're so nice, all those people in the gulags would have lost hope. But he didn't. He said they're evil, their system is evil, it crushes liberty, and it shook the walls of the gulag. And if we would speak truth about how evil Islam is, the doctrine, not the human beings that may or may not follow,
right,
the doctrine is evil, and it's contrary to natural law, and it's contrary to human dignity. That's the reality of it. So when you speak truth into it, you shake literally those walls, and you give people stuck in it hope. Hey, maybe there's more than zero people out there that realize Islam is actually part of the problem. But what did we, from 9/11, Mr. Bush said, I want you to find I want you planners in the national security realm and in our military, figure out what's going on, but don't look at Islam.
Yep.
That's why we lost the wars. So every bad thing that you want to subscribe to Mr. Obama started under George Bush's administration, and it started with that lie.
Absolutely, John, that was a great summary, and we are sadly out of time. I do want to give you a quick opportunity to describe these classes that you offer. How can people find those?
So best way to communicate with me is at johnguandolo.com. But we got a great team. Some of you are familiar with the team. And if you reach out, we can give you information, but essentially it's for the citizens program is about 4 hours one evening and then all day the second day, and we'll abide by the community's schedule, and you get an entire understanding, is certainly the first night, of what the bad guys are doing, who they are, and then the whole second day is what's the solution and getting you organized and training you.
I'm so glad you have what is the solution, because so many serious issues face America. And when people get immersed and they understand them, it is the main question I get after public speaking is, tell me something I can do. How do we get out of this? How do we fix it? I'm utterly optimistic, but it does take people caring enough. So
right.
johnguandolo.com, go there, submit
send
a
me
form,
a note. Yep.
Send me a note, and you can come and join one of your classes. John, first of all, thank you for coming in today, and thank you for all you do to just
Thanks.
Speak up for America. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
On America Can We Talk next week, we'll be playing an interview I did very recently with Dr. Richard Bartlett, who is really going to open your mind to what has happened, what is coming in terms of pandemics and threats to our future freedom. And it's full of data and substance. It's just a wonderful interview I just privately recorded with him recently, so that's next week. Following week, we have Evan Sayet in studio. He is a former left-wing atheist who happens to be Jewish, who is now a practicing Jew, a very ardent believer in his faith, and also wrote a book about atheism. His book is called, this isn't the whole title, Magic Soup, Typing Monkeys and Something Else. But it's a really in-depth look at what atheism claims and how it's just inconsistent with facts, reality, truth, history. It's a real takedown, and it's talking about atheism not just as people who casually say, I think I decided I didn't believe in God, but how atheism is a political movement designed, and one of the many ways in which America is being just taken down ideologically by people planting thoughts in the minds of our hearts and minds of our precious fellow Americans. So it takes down atheism. He is also a former comedian, so he's funny, entertaining, a great writer, great thinker. So that's in 2 weeks, Evan Sayet. Well, thank you for tuning in to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiadis. The show is America Can We Talk. You can find it online at americacanwetalk.org. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
America Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you